And that is just something which, you know, continues to be an issue. If you don't actually have utility, then, you know, why would people feel so like bullish about the type of value that's accruing to the system? It's all just left hand trading with right hand, a bunch of crypto finance people trading with a bunch of other crypto finance people with the promise of eventual value, but no value yet. So wow. We see more adoption through the ETF, and we see more mind share, like cultural assimilation. That's good. That's helpful. But we still don't have that BlackRock ETF of utility yet.
Hello, innovators, explorers, and risk takers. Welcome to another episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. I'm your host, Sam Kamani. And today on my podcast, I'm interviewing Jehan Chu. Jehan is the founder of Connect Capital. Now, Connect Capital is a Web3 venture capital fund that invests in Web3 projects that are changing the world, and they have made over 270 investments. And today he's here with his insights and advice for Web3 founders. So if you're building something in Web3 or just interested in Web3, then this episode is for you. But before we get started, I want to share that this podcast does not contain any financial advice. This is for educational purposes only. With that out of the way, let's get into it. So Jehan, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. Looking forward to interviewing you and learning more about Kinetic Capital and everything that you are doing in the Web3 blockchain crypto space. So welcome to the show.
Awesome, Sam. Thanks so much for having me.
That's great. Would love to learn a bit more about the thesis of Kinetic Capital. What are the type of startups you look for, and what do you generally like to invest in and see?
Sure. We started, in fact, I personally started not even in the crypto world. I guess my story goes all the way back to the early days of internet, back in the kind of late 90s, early 2000s. And so those are really the formative kind of years of me thinking about technology and internet. And I grew up on books like Neuromancer and Snow Crash, which, you know, really helped me get an impression. I credit those guys, those authors, for really helping me understand the expanse of what digital culture and digital life and digital future could be. So I was actually just a coder in the early days. And then fast forward, I worked for Sotheby's. I was in the art world for many years. And then I actually didn't really get into crypto until about late 2013. And famously bought my first Bitcoin from Arthur Hayes from BitMEX. Wow. And this is while I was in Hong Kong, because he was also in Hong Kong at the time. And that was really my kind of falling down the rabbit hole of Bitcoin. It was very much around thinking about it as this, the future of internet. And back in those days, our tagline was, where we are with Bitcoin today is where we were with internet in 1994. And while I was still in school in 94, I understood what internet in 94 looked like and smelt like. And when I graduated college and started working as a coder, doing HTML, I was just too naive and too young and too stupid and inexperienced to really understand what this whole movement was. It's amazing that we're even investing in 19-year-old founders right now. When I was 19, I had no sense of what was happening around me in any macro level beyond the kind of boundaries of my university. So I'm always amazed to see these incredibly young founders who have the intelligence and insight to be founding companies, much less doing anything that they're else doing in life. Anyway, so that was how I came into it. And I was in love with this idea that here's this new thing in 2013, which they say is going to be the next internet. And if that's true, I was in the first internet. I wasn't smart enough to be able to take advantage of it fully. So I'm not going to miss it this time. And back in early 2014, there just wasn't that much money. There wasn't that much opportunity. There wasn't even much information. You could literally consume all of the information you needed about blockchain and Bitcoin. I mean, there wasn't a blockchain back then. It was just Bitcoin and maybe a colored coin, the managed chain. It was very digestible. It's very digestible. So fast forward, I got into it that way. And that was convinced me to really align myself, teach myself by teaching others, and then go all in. And so by 2016, I'd started Kinetic and went full-time from the art world into crypto. And that kind of led me to today.
Oh, that's amazing. Amazing story. So you were really early. So 2013, I remember I was trying to mine Bitcoin in my laptop and it was incredibly challenging even at that time. And I was thinking that, oh, who will use this tech? I can't see my parents using it. But now actually I can see everyone using it. We have come such a long way. And that brings me to this next question is how our industry feels like it moves from narrative to narrative, hype to hype. How do you distinguish between what is hype and what is genuine when you look at projects or in Web3?
I didn't answer your question about thesis and how we invest.
Oh, yes.
It ties into how we identify kind of hype and then distinguish kind of signal from noise. So we don't have a thesis per se in the sense that some funds have a thesis. And to be fair, we're not actually a fund. You could call Kinetic more like a multifamily office. It's my family in a way and my partner's family and we just invest together. So we don't have outside capital. We don't have LPs. We never raise money. We just invest our own money. And that gives us, for better and for worse, the freedom and the kind of space to just invest in whatever we want to. We don't actually have anybody to report to other than my wife, who's also very much part of the business. And thematically, what that means is that we have the ability to actually explore through investments. And I think we do that. So if I had to name like our thematic thesis, et cetera, it would probably be something like ridiculous, like hyperlateralism. And hyperlateralism just means that we can invest in everything in the blockchain space. And what I actually like about that, the kind of tongue in cheek aside, is actually our thesis is that it really is the next layer of the internet. And yes. So no matter what it is that you're touching that touches the internet, it will eventually touch a or many blockchains in one form or another, whether it's data, whether it's finance, whether it's security, et cetera. And what that means is that everything converges back to the blockchain or blockchains. And I would think that kind of hyperlateralism, that kind of overall convergence will happen. And so we're already seeing, I remember three years ago, I was talking about this and now we have it. You have NFTs crossing over with DeFi, crossing over with custody, crossing over with identity, crossing over with all these different types of things which used to be siloed. So everything converges. That's one thesis. I think the other thesis that we really believe in is one of hybridism. And what that means is I actually don't believe in full decentralization, not in the short to medium term, because I don't think it's necessary. I don't think that it's practical. And I think that this idea that you have a blend, you have layers of centralized and decentralized utility makes a lot more sense, especially in the transition. And it's just whatever tool fits need is the best way to approach it. So these two things, I think, really drive how we think about things. But at the end of the day, we've invested in over 275, probably coming up on 300 companies, from little companies that you've never heard of. Like we invested in Yellow Heart, which is no longer around. It was the first company to put a full music album from the Kings of Leon as an NFT. They sold it as an NFT to we're seed investors in Polkadot and Solana and Ethereum Crown Sale. But we're also seed investors in WorldCoin, Sam Altman's identity. Yes, so we're very broad in kind of what we do, but it is to some degree by design.
That's fantastic. I completely understand what you're saying about the centralization, decentralization debate. I do feel like as well that I feel like that's my contrarian view, that there is still a need for centralization. It helps standardize things. Otherwise, you end up with lots of things that don't talk to each other, and it makes it harder for the end user. It's driving is easy because there is centralized regulation on how the indicators should be and lights should be and how bright they can be and all those type of things, which makes the end user's life easier. So centralization can be a force for good as well as negative as well. It's a double-edged sword. So there is a space I completely believe, especially in while we are transitioning from, or things are transitioning from Web2 to Web3 or centralized to decentralized. There is a type of a hybrid model where there is the customer service that often comes with centralization and support for the end user, but then it still has the permissionless nature and the transparency and of the decentralized sort of benefits as well. What's one of the most sort of interesting project that you have invested in recently or that you feel really bullish about?
If you've heard me speak in the past 6 to 9 months, you would have heard an earful about Tong. So our thesis for 2024 is Tong, which is Telegram's blockchain. And people ask why Tong? And the answer is so simple, which makes it very viral, which is Telegram has 900 million monthly active users.
Exactly.
And Tong is a native crypto wallet, which is being natively distributed through the Telegram app to 800 million plus of these users. And it solves the one thing that no blockchain or crypto protocol has been able to solve, which is users. And that's it. That's literally the beginning and the end of the thesis. If you have users, they will come. And we're pretty excited to see how that is starting to play out. And early indications from everything from trading to gaming is proving that if you can convert even 1% of their user base, it is just remarkable in terms of the scale that you can achieve and how fast that scales beyond traditional largest Web3 protocols like Ethereum and Bitcoin and Solana, et cetera. So that's what we're focused on. And one of the things that we have been incubating, which we're pretty excited about, is a Tong EVM layer 2 called Atlas, where it allows EVM projects to quickly deploy on Tong without having to learn Fun C, which is the programming language of the Tong blockchain. Fun C is a bit of a lower level language, which is harder to just pick up. Whereas if you can take an EVM application and just convert it over, deploy it onto our Atlas L2, you have access to the Tong blockchain natively. We're pretty excited about that. And I think that is really going to accelerate the adoption of Tong. And we're super big fans of Tong Foundation, everything that they're doing. And we think this is going to be a way to accelerate adoption of Tong even faster.
Oh, definitely. I completely believe, because if all of like us in the crypto Web3 industry, we religiously use Telegram. People live on Telegram.
Yeah.
And it just makes so much sense. Facebook tried to do it with Libra and other things,
yep.
But then they did not have a huge native Web3 audience back in the days when they were trying to do it. And also the Web3 audience was a lot smaller, whereas now it feels not only has a huge audience, but it also has a huge Web3 audience that use it as their primary communication method. People use it as like their CRM. They pretty much, this is where all their contacts live. I would not know what to do if ever I go to so many conferences just like you, and I've got everyone in Telegram and all my conversations are there.
100%.
I've never moved them out. So it is, I can see that. Yeah.
Telegram
is the way to go. Yeah. Yeah. Tong is the way to go. I think I did write about that as well sometime. And yes, I've heard you speak about Tong as well, how you are quite bullish about Tong. And this is a conversation I've had with few other VCs as well, and that some other, like a couple of them were saying about how social hasn't, I don't know, transferred to Web3 as that they would have hoped. Why do you
Correct.
Think that is? Why hasn't there been a huge social media type play in the decentralized world?
There have been many plays, obviously. You go back to things like, I don't know what the earliest ones were, but the things like BitCloud. Obviously, Friends Tech, there was, I think, and there have been so many different plays, but none of them have really made any difference. Blue Sky from Jack Dorsey, what was the other one? Mammoth? I can't remember what it's called now, but I remember there was like 6 months or 3 months where people were talking, thinking that maybe Mammoth or something was going to be the next Twitter.
Yes.
None of them have really taken.
I don't know. I know which one you mean, but it was painful. I tried to use it. A lot of them have been painful. And then you have to create your own server type thing and invite people there, because it doesn't have that critical mass, and social needs that critical mass.
Yes.
Like if none of your friends are there, it's not going to work. If no one's talking there, it doesn't work.
And what's the new one that people keep inviting me to, which I actually did download? AirChat. Yes, AirChat.
AirChat. I downloaded it, but I never opened it.
Exactly. I think I opened it a couple times, but there's nothing that tells me to go. So the answer to this is, I think all of these applications are trying to reinvent the wheel rather than trying to build a car on top of four wheels. So what's happening is that they have these ideas about what would make things better, but without really having realistic kind of ways to get that critical mass that you're talking about. And that's why I think Telegram probably is in the best position versus, say, WhatsApp and WeChat, because Telegram is, to some degree, the a non-sovereign aligned messaging app. Even though the founders are Russian by birth, they live in Dubai, and the Telegram itself is famously not in Russia, not aligned with Russia, and to some degree, not anti-Russia, but not under Russia's control, the same way that WeChat is under China's control, and to some degree, how WhatsApp and Meta is obviously under, not the control, but certainly the kind of watchful eye of Congress. Telegram, I think, is realistically one of the last three apps just by virtue of its jurisdiction. Even Twitter, for every kind of effort that Elon makes, there's an equal and opposite reaction from the regulatory bodies. And so he's always going to be in this kind of Chinese finger trap of trying to do something which is good and noble, but also has a very strong anti-dynamic. Whereas nobody's really against Telegram, except maybe Putin, but I don't think that's even a thing anymore, but I don't know. So it's interesting. Yeah. I think that Telegram has this vector and almost frictionless kind of way to build itself, not in stealth, but quietly, before most of the world really understands what's happening. For sure, they are and will have a bigger target on their backs from regulators globally. It's coming, but I think that they're able to build up a really strong balance sheet and also a really strong user base before that happens.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just that whether it is, as you said, that they're able to build it in stealth, whereas nothing that Elon Musk does is in stealth. And so it's always going to attract a lot of attention, positive and negative. And people do see it as a form of centralization, whether it's centralization by government or by private corporate or a private company or a private person. So it's still seen as centralization, but whereas they're able to be anonymous to a certain extent for Telegram. So I can definitely see it very bullish on that. Apart from that, how our industry feels like it, our industry believes in these cycles of the crypto summer and winter. And now these days, they also talk about spring and autumn. Where do you feel like we are in this cycle currently?
I wish I knew. 3 months ago, I thought I knew, but now I don't really know if I know. I think I know that I don't know. And that's the best I can do.
That's very humble of you.
It's very clear that we are not in the bull run yet. And it's very clear that the levels that we've been seeing, although they're much better than they used to be, is nowhere near the type of bull run that one would expect. And I think part of that is because of the macroeconomic environment and the kind of interest rates and all those factors. I think there's a certain amount of uncertainty around the U.S. administration and how that may have an impact. But then finally, I also think it's because there's not a whole lot of utility in the ecosystem yet. And that was just something which, continues to be an issue. If you don't actually have utility, then, why would people feel so bullish about the type of value that's accruing to the system? It's all just left hand trading with right hand, a bunch of crypto finance people trading with a bunch of other crypto finance people with the promise of eventual value, but no value yet. So yeah. We see more adoption through the ETF, and we see more mind share, cultural assimilation. That's good. That's helpful. But we still don't have that BlackRock ETF of utility yet.
Yes.
And until we have that, I actually think that when we have the first real breakout yet that normal people can use, which is blockchain in the background, when we have that crossover mainstream success, that is when we'll really see things take off. And it's just a matter of what that's going to be. Who knows?
Yeah, that's very humble of you to say, yes, who knows? I completely agree. We don't really know. It's in 2008 when they're probably they or he or she was writing Bitcoin white paper would have never thought that people will be trading monkey pictures in 15 years time worth billions of dollars every year in total. And it's very hard to predict what and how we will be using this tech in 5 years time. And so I don't know. There are, like, whenever I talk with a lot of different founders or VCs or investors in this space, everyone has their own perspective of, oh, I think that the next utility is going to come from the gaming space or the social space or music, or everyone has their own theory over the last few years. Do you have any such theory where it's going to come from the next utility that will get some mass adoption? Would it be DeepN, DeScience? There's so many different things that people, or RWAs or anything.
I don't think it's, I'll cross things off. I don't think it's DeepN. I think that's too far away. We're seed investors in Render, and while we've done very well in Render and we love what they're doing, the actual crossover utility is not there yet. I don't think it's DeSci either, because DeSci, even if it's like super, super successful, is still very niche.
Yes.
That's not really going to be crossover mainstream. I think it's probably going to be something social or gaming. I think it's going to have to be something which is blockchain in the background and you don't really know what it is. I'll give you one example. This is not necessarily, I don't think it's this, but it's the closest analogy I can get to. Yeah. One of our portfolio companies is called Mythical Games.
Yes.
They are, their token is Myth, M-Y-T-H. And they have a game called NFL Rivals, and NFL, National Football League. It's, they actually have about 5 million MAU for their game. Wow. And it's the second most popular American football game on the App Store. And it's the only, it's actually, nobody plays it and knows that it's actually a Web3 game. It's on a private permission Ethereum chain, and then they have a public token. But for the players and the user, the gamers, like, they have no idea actually what they're doing. All the kind of trades they're doing, all the purchases, everything, that's actually all blockchain on the back end. And I think that it's going to be something like that, where not only is it not apparent, or the blockchain and the crypto aspect is invisible, but also it's irrelevant to the end user that it is blockchain. And everything should just function in a way which has nothing to do with the hooks or the technology behind it. Because obviously, when I use a web page, I don't question whether it's this, like XML or whatever.
Exactly.
You know, right. I don't even know technology. And why should I just need it to do what I needed to do? And obviously, people have been saying this forever. But I think that we're starting to see shoots, green shoots of examples and ways that it could actually emerge. I think NFL Rivals is actually a really good example of that.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. I completely agree with that. That, yes, we do need a level of abstraction. As we switch on our TV remote, we don't have to worry about what frequency the infrared is connecting with from the remote to the TV, and no need to learn anything. We don't need to learn what circuitry the TV has and what blah, blah, blah. It's mental overload for a consumer to learn so many crypto terms before they even get engaged in blockchain. It's like when all those layers are abstracted, then it will be just used as tech. Just as normal tech in lots of different things. And I feel like,
remember we used to say HTTP when we would tell somebody a web address, and then it was just www. Now we don't even say that. So we abstract out all that stuff. And I think that's what's happening in the kind of a crypto space as well. So it's just a matter of time. I think actually, if I had to guess, it's probably not going to be a native crypto protocol or technology. My guess is it's actually going to be some centralized system or Web2 system that
100%
again layers in an aspect of Web3 into a centralized service. So let's just imagine that, say, and actually now that I think about it, Talon is doing exactly this.
Yeah.
Telegram, it's a Web2 messaging app, and they're layering in payments through the Talon wallet, and they're also layering in digital assets. Right now they're called stickers, but soon they'll be called NFTs. So the wallet holds NFTs. And so actually, now that I think about it, probably it will be Talon and Telegram. Actually, that will be the breakout. And it won't be, oh, Web3 has arrived. It won't be this big heralding. It'll just be, wow, actually, did you know that Talon Our Telegram has whatever, 900 million monthly active users, and 100 million or 200 million actually have crypto wallets. It's going to be that. It's going to be, we're going to see it in hindsight. We're like, oh my God, it passed us by. Like crypto is starting to be mainstream. So I think that's probably that. It'll be a Web 2 or centralized or traditional platform, which makes use of Web 3 and kind of crypto hooks. And that's when we'll know, oh, wow, we're here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like on the finance, fintech, all that side of things, I think it will be stable coins where they would create the underlying layer of thing value.
100%. No, I actually agree with you. I think that would be my second guess. Stable coins and or central bank digital currencies. Yes. We have one stable coin that we invested in called FDUSD, First Digital USD. Yeah. Which is now the third largest US dollar backed stablecoin behind Circle and USDC. And it regularly out trades USDC on a daily basis, even though it has 1/10 of the asset base. So that's one. But I think there's another project that we invested in called UDPN, Universal Digital Payment Network. And I think that's again, one of those things where like playing the long game and taking a long-term kind of view on it, we're starting to see some of this infrastructure, like core infrastructure of global monetary systems and finance starting to layer in blockchain technology. This is not crypto technology per se, it's blockchain technology. But I definitely think that they have a Bank of International Settlements involved in the sandbox. They have HSBC yes. and Deutsche Bank and Standard Chartered and like all these like big global banks who are participating in a sandbox. For these trials to test out this new system, I think that's the flip side of it, which most people crypto either are not aware of or don't care about because it's not degen. There's not an easy way to monetize it. The narrative is super boring for somebody who's used to meme coins. But that is like for us, again, going back to this hybrid future, that's what we like, all these kind of out of the money contrarian bets about where the space goes. And we fortunately have the freedom to just invest in and find out.
Oh, that's amazing that you have this freedom. Would you ever raise another fund from LPs? Because you have been so successful. So many people already.
We've never raised a fund. To be honest, I don't think I could raise a fund because I don't know how to raise money. I know how to make money. I don't know how to raise money.
Oh, you'd be so successful, I can tell you. You have a very good name in the industry, as far as I know.
Yeah.
No, I think that's fantastic. I have just last one or two questions. And my last question is that, do you have any advice for Web3 founders? Because they are the main audience of this podcast.
Yeah, I think for Web3 founders, we are hopefully about to hit a bull cycle. And the bull cycle brings out the best and worst in the industry, the best meaning the most enthusiasm and the most passion, the most kind of conviction, and the most numbers of people who are willing to dive in and build. And the worst in the sense that it becomes very money grabbing, very kind of short-term transactional, unethical, and short-termist. I think for my best advice for founders who will be experiencing this bull cycle is to really stay close to first principles. And really just try to stay humble, stay true, try not to get distracted by what everyone else is doing. Don't really act with your ears. Like you have to act with your heart and your mind.
Yes.
And I think that those are the types of values that can help a founder inevitably not just get through the bull cycle, but also get through the for sure coming bear cycle that follows the bull cycle. Crypto is it's a war of attrition. And it's a game of survival. If you look at the most successful firms out there, it's the ones who survived the longest, not necessarily the quote unquote best ones, the ones who are still standing. It's that survival bias. But in order to have that bias, you have to survive. In order to survive, you need to have very clear, I would say, directions and very clear values and be able to be true to those values no matter what's happening around you. I think that's the one thing that we've been able to fortunately do fairly well is, I think partially we don't have investors. We just have ourselves and our firm is really a reflection of ourselves and our kind of mindset and the way that we approach things.
That's fantastic. And my final and last question is that, do you have a ask? Is there anything you're looking for? How can I help you or any of the audience listening to this help you?
Yeah, again, I think the main thing for us is we're all in on Tom, where we would really love all Ethereum projects or EVM projects to consider. If you want to reach 900 million users on Telegram and Tom, consider the Atlas protocol. We're in testnet right now. And if you want to know more, you can DM me at AppCollectionist on Twitter, or you can search for kind of Atlas protocol on Twitter. It's a great project and we just want more builders.
Yep, that's fantastic. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jehan, for sharing your vision, your experience, and your advice here. I will put all the links that you mentioned, whether it's about Dawn, Kinetic, or any other projects that we mentioned from your portfolio. And yeah, just wish you best of luck and look forward to seeing you at the next big conference somewhere in the world.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Sam. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening or watching this episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. By now, you know the drill. Leave a comment or share this episode with a friend and leave a review. I would love to hear from you. So that's why my DMs are open. Reach out to me, especially if you are a founder building a product in Web3. Then I would love to hear from you. What are your challenges? Is there anything that I can help you or my community can help you with? Thank you once again and wish you best of luck in building your startup or your project.